So what if you could hang out with really talented copywriters and other experts, ask them about their successes and failures, their work processes and their habits, then steal an idea or two to inspire your own work? That's what Kira and I try to do every week at the Copywriter Club podcast.
And you're invited to join the club for episode 5 as Rob and I interview each other about our businesses, how we got where we are, clients, the projects we're working on now, probably have some rants in there, or I might at some point.
Yeah, we'll see how that goes.
Hey, Rob, how's it going?
Good, Kira. How's it going with you?
Well, before we started recording, actually, I think we did start recording. I was just telling Rob that it's been an interesting morning. I feel like it's just that time of year where there are lots of projects. Every client I have is launching something. And so it's just been a bit crazy, a little crazy.
And some of those clients are difficult and hard to deal with, right? So
yes.
There's all kinds of things that we could talk about with that.
Yes. And it's funny because most of them are not difficult and most of them are awesome. But when you have that one difficult one, it overshadows everything, I have to really maintain perspective and step back at times.
Before we start talking about difficult clients, I have a question for you, Kira. Other than sort of like, how did you get your start and all that sort of stuff? I'm really curious. Why did you leave such a great job in marketing for the rough and tumble of freelancing and dealing with clients on your own and all of the issues that come up with it?
That's a good question. I think for me, I knew at my second big girl job, I was working at Estee Lauder in 2008. I had recently started my career, was recently out of college, and I remember working there. I was like this big, glamorous company before they cut everybody in 2008. And I remember sitting at my desk and just kind of imagining a company, running my own business. I was thinking about different ideas. I think at the time I was thinking about creating this t-shirt company with different designs focused on endangered animals and how I wanted to sell them online. And anyway, lots of ideas as I was sitting there. Maybe I wasn't busy enough.
Right.
And at the time I was volunteering at a zoo. So there was this like strong tie to animals. I think it's just been in me for a long time. I'm rebellious and contrarian enough that I don't like people telling me what to do. That it was just in me, and then I knew I wasn't ready. So I took other jobs after that that led me down the marketing path because I was naturally good at the marketing thing. And so I had worked at different nonprofits and then eventually a startup, Actionable Books, where I was the marketing director. And yeah, I mean, your question was why would you leave a good job, right? I think for me, there's got to be some pain usually. I think it's actually harder to leave when it's really cushy and things are really good. I think it's easy to leave when things are bad and you hate your boss. And I've been in that situation too. It's hard to leave when you actually like the people you work with and the startup is growing and they're hiring more people and there are lots of promises that they can actually deliver on, most likely. For me, I just knew that I was ready to step out from behind the scenes. I knew I had a lot I wanted to say, and I don't really know what that means yet. Maybe that meant starting a podcast with you, Rob. And I just knew I had a lot I wanted to do creatively to share. And I think part of it too is just I felt confident enough that I knew I had talent that I wanted to test in the marketplace. So I think part of it was just confidence and ego too.
Nice.
And what about you? I mean, why did you go down this path, especially with a family, with teenagers, really supporting them and being responsible for multiple people? This is a scary path.
Yeah, I've sort of been in and out of freelancing for, more than 20 years. I got my first job freelancing from, it's sort of a weird thing where there was a girl that I had met at a party who was doing some freelance writing, and she was maybe interested in getting to know me better. And so I think she said, hey, I've got this project you should help me out on. And I wrote, an article for, it was like a newspaper zine kind of a thing back in the 90s for an MLM. The business is out of business now. And, you know, I got like $300 for the project. And, you know, this is a time when I was tending bar and waiting tables. And it was sort of one of those things where it's like, hey, this is actually kind of a fun thing. And so I've sort of always done freelancing. I've been, you know, I've worked for an agency and I've been a copywriter in-house several times and then sort of walked away from that for a while to be part of a startup where I was doing all kinds of things from marketing to operations and sort of stepped away from writing for a while, went back and got an MBA. But, you know, through an acquisition and working for, you know, a big tech company, I decided it was time for me to go out on my own. And so I, for a while, ran my own software business, but finally came to the conclusion that what I really love to do and what I am best at is copywriting. And so over the last 2 years, I've just really thrown myself back into, you know, marketing consulting, helping people figure out, you know, the story that they need to tell, the responses that they need to get from customers, the psychology that's required to get people to click a button and say, yes, I want to buy this. And that's sort of where I am today.
Wow. So I kind of thought that you had been, well, I know you've been freelancing for years, but I guess I assume that you had been in this role for more than 2 years, like really building your freelancing business as a conversion copywriter. At least that's the way it feels, the way you present yourself in a really positive way.
I mean, to say that I only have 2 years wouldn't be correct, because obviously I've been doing it for a long time and there have been periods when I'll freelance, you know, while doing other jobs, that sort of thing. But I had sort of this other software business that I was running while I was freelancing. So that gave me sort of a cushion of income. But it was also a distraction from what I really wanted to do. You know, every time I would focus on that meant that I wasn't doing something that I loved. And so, yeah, like I said, about 2 years ago, I said, okay, let's make a change. And so I've been doing this full-time for, about 2 years. But, you know, with decades of experience behind me.
So how do you feel 2 years in with this full-time focus on conversion copywriting?
So things are always scary, right? I mean, you never stop wondering, is this the last client? You know, is this the last project? You know, if I finish things up and I don't have a ton of stuff out on the schedule, you know, it's like, what am I going to do? Right. So how I feel about it, every day I'm a little bit scared, but I also love what I do. And it's always fun, right? So, you know, one day I may be writing a product description for, you know, a company that sells safety equipment. And the next day I'm writing a sales page for a new app. And then, you know, the next week you're doing case studies based around, you know, training experience or all sorts of things. And so there's just so much variety that I just love this as a way to make a living.
So what part about it do you love the most? Because I feel like every time I speak to a copywriter, they love one aspect more than the rest. Like maybe it's this, the selling part, or it's the actual writing behind the scenes in your copy cave. Do you have one aspect that you love the most?
Not one, but there are a couple. I love writing sales pages, you know, or landing pages, you know, those sales messages and trying to figure out what it takes to get customers to click and decide, yep, I want to buy. Love that. I love the psychology of response and just getting people to do things differently. So, you know, human behavior, behavioral economics, neuroscience, that kind of stuff. I could read that and write about it all day long. And that's a lot of what I write about in my newsletter every week, is that kind of stuff. And it's really directly applicable to the kinds of projects that I like to take on. I wouldn't say that there are lots of projects that I don't like doing. You know, there are some things that I don't love writing about. I don't take on gaming type stuff or, you know, some projects that sort of go on and can get a little bit boring sometimes. But I like a really wide variety. How about you? Like, I noticed lately you've been doing a ton of sales pages, but you've done a lot of other stuff too. Like, what do you like working on most?
Yeah. And it's funny. I feel like every sales page just launched at the same time. So it's been fun to see them all live and well designed and living and breathing.
Really, really good sales pages too. Like we should link to a few of them or to screen grabs of a few of them, because I'm guessing that some of them will be down by the time that we're able to post this. But fantastic, you know, writing and really good sales messages.
Thank you. And anytime Rob says that, I feel, I don't know, I always feel good when you've complimented my work, because I know it's you mean it and you wouldn't say it otherwise. So thank you. I think for me, I have kind of fallen into the long form sales pages recently because it seems like that's what people have been asking me for. And I happen to really like it. And I think for me, I just really want to specialize in one thing and do it really well right now. It doesn't mean I don't like writing other types of projects. I'm open to it, but I just feel like at this stage in my business, I want to be known for something. And so that's what it is. It kind of just, I don't know, it just kind of happened organically, and I'm 100% into it. I, like you, I love the sales page format. I continue to learn. It continues to challenge me every single time. It's always so hard. And I think that's why I like it. It's this like daunting task every time.
It's interesting too, because especially with sales pages, I mean, there's sort of that format that you're piecing together. It's a, you know, a puzzle, and you've got those pieces that have to be in there. And maybe you're following a framework like, you know, PAS, problem, agitate, solve, or, you know, one of the other frameworks. But at the same time, you're also trying to figure out like, okay, what's the different hook, right? So, and some of the hooks that are on your sales pages are fascinating that I've seen recently, but they're all different. And so, yeah, it's like approaching a similar problem, but it's always, maybe it's like writing a different action movie over and over, like Fast and Furious 1 through 7. They're all different, but they're all kind of the same, right?
Wait, there are 7 Fast and Furious movies?
Maybe there's 8.
That's insane. I don't know.
But yeah.
Wow. Okay. Yeah, I feel like, I mean, I know I have some interest in shorter form landing pages, which I've done, but I feel like I haven't mastered those, especially for tech companies. I've worked on different app landing pages. I can't say I have mastered it. So I might want to move down in that direction so I can really specialize there as well. But I think for now, I always kind of have that fear of, is this my last long form sales page too? You know, well, it's not even like, will someone ask me for another one? It's more like, can I continue to improve upon these? Not because they're so good, but just because I might burn out. I might just get bored with these, and I don't want to. I want to keep doing them. So I think there's just fear around potentially losing interest in it, which could happen.
Yeah, certainly could. So while we're talking about sales pages, I have a question about what you charge.
Oh.
So when let's say somebody comes to you with a new training series that they've just created, how do you take a look at what they've got and say, yes, that is going to be, you know, $3,000, or this one is different, and because it's different, it's going to be $5,000, or you know, what are you charging, and how do you come up with that?
Yeah, that's like the best question ever, and I'm going to ask you in a second and get back at you for this.
Busily scribbling down an answer.
So I will be upfront about what I charge. I probably should date the time of this conversation, because my rate may be totally different by the time we air this. But as of right now, I'm charging $4,000 to $5,000 for a long form sales page, which I feel justified and comfortable and confident in that amount. Uh-huh. It's not to say I won't go up or down depending on the project and the client, but that's where I'm at right now. But only a couple months ago, I was charging $2,500. And then within the year, within 8 months, I was charging $1,500. And I remember, so it's jumped rather quickly. But I also, like you said, I've been pumping them out and spending a lot of time in that space. And I know that the ROI is great. And I'm actually working on a few case studies using our friend Joel Kletke's case study buddy business. He's going to create a case study for me, or a couple of them, based on these recent long form sales pages, so I can show the value, because I do want to make it really clear, especially as I up the price even more, this is what you get in return and this is what it's like to work with me.
And when you work on one, it seems to me that like the one leads to the next. So you'll do one for, Joanna at Copy Hackers, and then she refers you to the next client, and then that person sort of refers you to the next. Is that right?
Let's see. It has. Yes. Yeah, it is. You know what? So one of the bigger ones was with Femgineer. I worked with Purnima from Femgineer, and she gave me this opportunity to create a wonderful sales page. We spent a lot of time working together, and she had a good designer. And that's the hard part. If you don't have a good designer, then people look at your stuff and they could care less. But the output and the final product was good, and I shared it with enough people in our circle that Joanna saw it and she liked it. And so then she asked me to help her with a sales page a couple months later. And then because I worked with her on her sales page, she introduced me to Talia Wolf from, she has her new brand under her name. And I worked on a long form sales page with her. And so it does have this effect of just, I think what I learned is that if you share your work, especially with other copywriters, then it goes a lot further and they kind of know what you're doing and your skill level. And so they're more likely to recommend you. So I would say like share your work and get feedback as much as possible.
Yeah, that's great advice.
And what about for you? So what's your journey been like as far as landing pages and sales pages and what you charge?
I'm a lot like you, where I will charge generally in that $3,000 to $5,000 range. It really depends on what the product is and how much research that I'm going to be doing. So I don't have any sort of package pricing other than a project minimum of $2,500. That's not to say that I sometimes don't take projects that are smaller than that, just, you know, to fill up a small bit of time or whatever. But in general, I really like a project that's going to hold me, you know, for a few days and take me time to research and do some questionnaires to customers and figure out what the right messaging is. And that takes time and money, but I don't have a set price. And so, you know, if it's something that I look and say, okay, this is going to take me a week, that's, you know, that's definitely going to be, you know, $5,000. If it's something that I'm really familiar with, or I have a reference page that I'm working off of, that's going to be a lot closer to say $2,500 or $3,000. So it really depends entirely on how much effort and research that I'm going to be doing in order, to complete that page. And I've had really good successes in the past. You know, I worked with Conversion XL Agency on a page for one of their clients that unfortunately I can't share that page or talk about it because of an NDA, but it was a really fun page to write and to work on, and resulted in a pretty good bump. I was actually matched against an existing page that had been written by a copywriter that specialized in that industry. But when we applied conversion principles to that page, we saw a really nice bump in clicks through to the order page, and even a bump in orders as well, that resulted in, you know, hundreds of thousands of additional sales for this, or dollars worth of sales for their client. That's the thing that I think I love the most is you can write something and actually see the impact that it has on a business.
Oh, I want to hear more about that project, but I know you can't share it. But that's exciting.
Yeah, those kinds of projects are really fun when they come along. A lot of times you're working for clients that don't have previous information, or, you know, you're helping them get off the ground. And so you don't know, say, a before and after kind of a response. But when you get that, it's fantastic.
So how did you get that project?
I think it started with being exposed to Conversion XL Agency at their annual conference. And then another writer that we both know, Jen Haveis, referred. I think she was asked to work on the project and didn't have time, or there was some reason that she couldn't do it. And so she reached out and just said, hey, is this something you'd be interested in? And because I had that additional familiarity with CXL, it just sort of came together, and it was great. Since then, I've, you know, worked on other projects with them and other projects for their clients. I also get a few clients from my newsletter, which helps. Those are people, I guess, that find me. They're on Twitter or on my website and then subscribe and seem to like what I write over time. And so they'll reach out after a while and say, hey, this is where I'm at. I'd, you know, like to work with you, and here's my budget, that kind of thing.
Yeah, and I want to talk about your newsletter in a little bit too, but that made me think of just recently, I was working on a sales page for my client James Wedmore, who's a wonderful client, wonderful team. And he just kind of invited me on a call with one of his affiliates and was like, Kira, can you help with a couple affiliate emails? And this was, you know, already kind of a crazy month for me where I took on more than I can handle. And so I think at times like that, it's really easy to say, whoa, 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 no, we hadn't talked about this. This is extra work. This is extra time. And you really sometimes you just can't do it. And I have a bad habit of saying yes, which helps and hurts at different times. And so I was like, yeah, 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 we'll do it. And so I've been working with his affiliates and helping them write their emails. And it's something that at first I was like, I don't know if this is a good idea, if I can deliver. And the end result is that I actually have a new client, one of those affiliates who I helped, liked the work. And now we're working together on the biggest project I've really taken on at this point. And I really like this client. And so I think just to go along with what we're saying, it's sometimes good to say yes, even though you don't think you have the time, or maybe it's not an additional chunk of change, but it could lead to something really big and worthwhile. And I think that's what's helped me kind of gain new clients and bigger projects over the past, definitely over the past 6 months.
Yeah, one thing leads to another. Either one client leads to another, or an association with another writer who, you know, is overwhelmed or too busy, or maybe doesn't focus in that specific area, may make a referral to you. So one thing definitely leads to another. So while we're still talking about clients and you know, writing these sales pages, occasionally you take on a project that goes south. And I want to know, Kira, what are your strategies for dealing with those kinds of projects?
The no strategy strategy? That's my problem. I don't have a strategy. And so I would actually like to hear from you. What I've found is that I'm dealing with less challenging clients at this stage, luckily. Early on, I dealt with more. I was smaller projects. Smaller price points, I think they attract more problems to begin with. And I wasn't trusting my gut. So I said yes to projects I kind of knew I shouldn't say yes to. Uh-huh. But at this stage, I am now trusting my gut. But that being said, I have taken on at least two in the past few months where I was like, I probably shouldn't have. It probably wasn't worth it. And I knew it at the time, but I did it anyway. And so I think what I'm just going to say is that you should always trust your gut. But I think there are different times where you should just say yes and get experience. And then once you reach a point where you can say no, start saying no. And so I'm at the stage now where this morning I told myself, I only want to work with clients I am really excited about. And I think I'm at a stage where I can say that and I can do it. Maybe not. Maybe I'll find out that I need to start saying yes to some of the other clients, but I think I'm at the stage where I can do it. So I need to stand by that.
I think you make a really important point though. You know, when you're working with clients who are not value driven, but price driven, and looking for, you know, cheap solutions just to get copy out there, they don't really value what you do for them as much as they just need a need met. You know, I need a blog post, I need a brochure, mm-hmm. Then you're sort of opening yourself up for problems, because those clients, like I said, they're price driven and they expect a lot and they don't see the value that you can bring. But when you're working with, you know, professionals who understand the value of copy, and some of the people that you've mentioned already, you know, who have developed courses and have done, you know, in-person training, and they know the value of a sales page that actually converts and it's actually going to impact their livelihood, those people seem more willing to trust the experience and the skill set that you bring to the table.
Yeah, and I think that's all it is. It's just they trust you. They know that you know what you're doing. They know that you know more than them in this particular area, and they let you do your thing. And it doesn't mean they can't question you, but the only people I've had problems with have not had that trust for whatever reason. And then that could be on your part or, you know, on my part for not educating them. Like, this is what I do, and not providing that. I guess I get stubborn and I'm kind of like, I don't need to provide that. I just know, and you should just know that I know. And maybe that is an issue, but I think if you have clients that trust your expertise, things go very smoothly.
And I think there's a way to present it to clients as well. Oftentimes, and this certainly happened in the beginning of my career, and sometimes I even, you know, do it now, where I'll make a presentation to a client and then I sort of open it up. I open myself up for those kinds of problems by saying things like, what do you think? Or, you know, not presenting it as the expert, but rather saying, okay, here's a product and now go ahead and edit and change it to to what you think. And I'll go ahead and make those changes. And that is so not the right approach if you're the expert. And if you're confident in what you've written and presented, and really you can only do that if you are the expert. Like if you're BSing yourself, your way through the whole process, then you can't do this. But if you really do understand what you're working on, it's not just a matter of, I've just written these pretty words, but you've really brought something to the table. You need to stand up and say to the client, this is why. Of course, the client always has the option to make the changes. They're paying for the copy, but we shouldn't present it in a way that says, I'm not the expert, you are. Go ahead and make changes to the copy that I've written.
So how do you think you can do that most effectively? I mean, and what do you have to share? Like, what's too much? What's not enough?
That is a great question. And I think it's something that we probably all struggle with when we present to clients. And it's probably just avoiding those kinds of comments that we make at the end of a presentation, like, you know, what do you think? Or what changes would you like to see? And really just presenting it as, hey, this is a product. This is why I think it will work. I'd love to test it like this. And then if a client comes back and says, yeah, well, we're not quite sure about this headline. If you can back it up and argue for it and actually have a reason for it, you know, because you wrote 50 headlines and, you know, this one is based on a customer comment that you pulled out of your research or the survey that you did with the customers, or is based on a formula that has performed well in other situations. You can talk to that. I think that works a lot better than, you know, okay, well, let me see what I can do with the headline. Or, you know, somebody says, hey, you know, let's add a power word, or, you know, something like one weird trick, or, you know, all those little things that people do in order to get, you know, attention. I think we just need to be more professional and, you know, stand up for our stuff.
And I really want to find out more about your process with clients, because I feel like based on your experience that you probably have nailed this. And I think there's a lot I can learn. Just, I mean, even if you could just run through the stages and how you interact with a client from the onboarding stage.
So I don't know that I have nailed it. In fact, when we
I'm
going to
pretend like you have,
when we were talking with Rye Schwartz in a previous episode, you know, where he talks about getting to know the client like a first date, I don't do that as well as he does. And that's probably something that I need to figure out how to do better. But my process for working with a client starts with whatever that email interaction is, you know, where they reach out or they're referred and say, you know, hey, I'm interested in working with you. And I'll generally send them just a quick email that says, okay, tell me more about your project. You know, who are your customers? What does your product or service do? You know, those basic questions, just to try to understand if this is...
Do you do it through a form or do you just ask through the email?
I actually usually just do it through email.
Okay.
And there's, you know, five or six different questions. I'll usually also ask about budget, not because I want to, you know, make sure that I get every penny out of them, but because so many clients are outside of my budget. You know, they're looking for a sales page, but they've only got a budget of say $400, and that, you know, that's just not going to work for me. And there are probably writers out there who can help them better off. And so understanding that about the client, where they're at, really helps me say, okay, is this a project that is in my wheelhouse? Is this, you know, a project type that I have worked on before? You know, I like to write a lot of tech, SaaS. I've done, you know, some writing in the nutraceutical and healthcare. I've done a little bit of finance. And you know, is this an expertise that I have, or I'm going to have to spend more time learning about, you know, getting up to speed, that kind of thing. And so all of that sort of goes into that. And it's really interesting. The best clients send back a ton of information in response to that email. And the worst clients will usually say something like, we need help with our story. And they ignore all of the other questions.
Wow.
You know, and right there, I sort of know, okay, they don't know what they want. You know, they don't know usually what I'll ask is, you know, are we talking about creating, you know, a sales page, a website, you know, where is it that you want to use this copy? And if they come back and they don't have specific answers for those, then I know that this is probably not going to be a great client. That first step helps me weed out people, because I know it's going to be hard to get information out of them in the future, or they don't have enough together to really be able to work with me effectively. And I'm not saying that they're not a good client for somebody else, and I'm not saying that they don't know what they're doing, but that just, my process in communicating back and forth, that just really helps me identify, okay, this person is going to get me the information that I need to move forward and help them.
So will you ditch them if they only gave you a one or two sentence response and ignore a couple of your questions? Will you just say, hey, this isn't going to work, even if they are technically qualified and have the budget?
Yeah, usually I wouldn't know if they have a budget or not because they haven't answered that question, but right. It sort of depends. It sort of depends. So oftentimes I'll respond back with an email back saying, okay, what about these other questions? And you know, if they don't answer them a second time, then I know, yeah, we're probably not going to fit. And I'll respond back, say, you know, given the answers, you know, or given the conversation we've had so far, this doesn't
feel like the lack of response.
Exactly. This doesn't feel like it's going to, you know, be a project that's right for me, but there are other writers. And occasionally I'll point them in the direction of somebody who I think might be able to help them out. But if they have responded, then the next step, you know, is I'll put together a proposal. Sometimes it's less formal. If we've got a really good rapport going, we've had some back and forth, I know what they want, they know what they need, and we can agree on a price really quickly. But occasionally I put together a 3 or 4 page formal proposal that talks about what the project is, what my experience is. It includes some quotes from previous clients. Occasionally it will include a sample that I have done before, you know, similar project, that kind of a thing, and the responses. It will include all of the deliverables. So I'll outline, you know, I'm going to do in phase one, this is the research that I'll do, and whether or not I provide them with a copy of the research as a deliverable is outlined there. Phase two, this is the copy and editing that I will do, and I will create these web pages or this sales page, and it will, you know, be, it'll include whatever, you know, we had talked about. And then in the third phase would be doing some testing, trying to, you know, create variants to improve the response, that kind of a thing. And usually when I bid on that project, I will create a price that's based on phase one or phase two. And then phase three, because it's ongoing, sort of comes after all of that. Then I send that proposal and an invoice. Usually I will bill at least 50% up front. If it's below my project minimum, it's 100% up front. Then we get to work, and I'll put together a survey that goes out to customers so that I can see what customers are thinking about the product itself, the problems that it solves for them, how they talk about it, because I really want to get into the heads of the customer. And once I get that information back and I do my own, you know, research, competitive research and that sort of thing, then I start writing copy, and I'll share that with them as a finalized document. If I'm writing a web page, that's almost always going to be a wireframe, not just a copy doc, which feels more formal and tends to result in fewer changes. And it also feels more professional, I think, to the client, where they look at it and say, oh yeah, he's really thought out the layout and how this all fits together. And then we go through revisions, and hopefully we continue working together, you know, on projects in the future. That's my whole process. But like I said, I could probably do a lot more upfront, you know, getting to know the customer, getting to know their business and why they're there, and all of those things that Rai talked about in that previous episode.
Wow. Okay. Lots of questions.
But what's your process? When I've seen some of the stuff that you've written, you've shared it with me in draft form oftentimes, and you know, we've had some back and forth about, you know, some of the phrasing or, you know, where you're making an argument or that sort of thing. But how do you collect the information up front so that, you know, when you're writing, you know, a really personal sales page, and some of your sales pages talk about the personal story of the person who has created the product or, you know, service. How do you get all of that stuff before you start? And what does your process look like?
I jump into calls really early on. And I actually, that's what I noted about yours. I wanted to ask you if you jump on a call with them before they even accept your proposal, or is that not part of your process?
I will get on a call before the proposal, but not before they've responded to an email or two. So
okay.
You know, I don't want to spend a half an hour talking to somebody who's got, you know, a budget of $250 and they want 7 blog posts. And that's just not the kind of copy that I do, right? So I want to find out more about them before I get onto a call. But once I get that basic information, this is my product, this is our customers, you know, this is the pain point. You know, I'm looking at this kind of a timeline, this budget, these are my competitors. And, you know, if they have them, these are the results so far that we've got. If I have that information, then yes, I want to talk to them.
So how long are those calls typically? Are you selling them? Or is it just really like, hey, this is my process, I just wanted to say hi, and now I'm going to send you the proposal?
So every call is a sales call, even if it's just, hey, to say hi. And
that's true.
You know, it's if I'm really interested in working with them, of course, I want them to understand my experience. I want them to see me as somebody that they can work with, that I'm easy to work with, that I'm going to take care of them, all that kind of thing. They're usually somewhere between 20 and 45 minutes, in that discussion. And I think with that discussion, you sort of lock down, okay, what is the entire sales process? What does the whole funnel look like? You know, really, are you able to help them? You get an understanding of who they are as a customer, if this is the kind of project you want to take on. So all of that sort of happens in that phone call. But like I said, that is usually before I would send a proposal, we've had that conversation. How about you?
Okay. Yeah, so I do something similar then. So I have a form on my services page. I have different forms for each of the services. And so I do have multiple questions on there. When someone submits a form through my website, I usually know that they're pretty serious because, like you said, they've taken time to fill out that form. So I flag those people. But I also get a lot of people that aren't going through that services page, or just emailing me, or they've heard about me somewhere else. And so, like you said, you never know if it's serious or if it's going to be a good fit. I don't have set questions I ask them, and I don't send them a survey at that point. I think I should, based on what you said, and also based on what Jessica Mayring does. She sends them a survey with a bunch of questions. I think that would help weed out people. That's my biggest issue, jumping on calls with people that I shouldn't really even be chatting with. It's just not a good fit. So once I do feel like someone is good to go and this could be a possibility, I do jump on a call with them on Skype. I used to do video calls. I've cut out video calls and now I'm doing audio, mostly because I haven't been showering as much recently. So, and the lighting has not been as good in my apartment. So good reasons not to do video calls. But I actually did think that it helped. I do like the power of video calls. So I may go back to them and start showering more soon. So then once I do the video call, at that point, I kind of know if it's a good fit. Like you said, I've gotten better at the sales process. I do feel like I am selling them. It's become a lot easier. I actually feel like I'm pretty good at the sales part. And then I pull together a proposal that is pretty basic. I would love to see your proposals, Rob. I kind of feel like this is a good product in general. If there's something where we can share a variety of people's copywriters' proposals, like as you were saying, I was like, oh, I know I could up my game if I improve my proposal. I need to work on that because it's visually, it looks good, but I think it's just not very meaty. And it sounds like yours is meaty.
Well, I try to make it meaty, but I'm sure that mine isn't the best one out there. And I think you're right. It'd be cool to share proposals, you know, among
how cool would that be?
Of copywriters. Maybe we'll see if we can get someone to respond to that in our Facebook group or something like that.
Yeah, we'll have to orchestrate that. So, but usually I think the proposal I use Proposify, and because it's really highly visual, I put a bunch of my branded images in there. So it's like a lot of me, which is probably obnoxious, but people seem to like it. And I've got some really solid testimonials in that proposal, and then links to my most recent work. Like you said, that's pretty basic. And then once people accept the proposal, we schedule a kickoff call. I have a 90-minute kickoff call with them. I used to do 1 hour. I felt like it wasn't enough. And even now with 90 minutes, I actually feel like that's not enough.
Interesting.
But and a lot of this came from our session with Rye Schwartz in Sonoma when we sat down with him and he shared his process. And it really helped me rethink the way I'm working with clients too. And so I do think that I want to put more emphasis on really getting to know the client. I have been doing that, but I feel like there's more I could do. I think I might schedule another call after that, or maybe make it the thing is, people don't have a lot of time. So if I made it a 2-hour kickoff call, that would turn off a lot of clients too.
Yeah, that's a long call. That's a really long call. On the other hand, though, you know, when we're talking about, when you're talking about, you know, really trying to get to know somebody, like, you know, Rye says, and as you almost need to for some of these sales pages that you've been writing lately, you need that time and you really need to dive into the personal story and the business story and the product and what, you know, it can deliver and the value. And that's not something you can do in 20 minutes.
Exactly. And then, part of the conversation is taken up because you're just chatting about something you have in common and then 20 minutes is gone from the call. So I actually might break it up into 2 different calls, 1 hour each. That would be ideal in the new year. Anyway, but I do feel like I get a good idea of who they are. Before they jump on that kickoff call with me, they filled out an online questionnaire, which I could link to in our show notes. And it includes about 40 questions that help me get to know them. I am updating those questions as well. I feel like I could pull in some really juicy ones that I've pulled from other copywriters we've shared. It's been typically just more about personality and getting to know them as a person. I might pull in, I don't know. So I'm working on that, but it has helped me really get to know people and my clients. It's really personal. I ask a lot of personal questions. I'm not afraid to get really personal and ask kind of awkward questions, and I give them the out. They can always tell me to shove off, and that's fine, but no one ever does. They're happy to share. And so I get a lot of good information, so I really know them as a person before I even interview their customers. So the next part of the process is that I interview 8 of their customers or clients. Typically it's 8, sometimes it's more, sometimes it's less. That is something I made optional for a while. And then I finally was like, this is actually working and it's really helpful. This is no longer optional. And now it's just part of my process. I think we could probably go deeper into the research in another conversation before I jump into the copywriting and spend a lot of time there. So like you said, there's a lot of work up front before I even start writing the copy. I include one revision in the process. From there on out, I typically am not jumping on calls. I'm just doing everything through Google Docs. But I will jump on a call if needed. And then I have shared wireframes, not with every project. I'm actually really curious about your wireframes, Rob, if you share that with, you know, what type of projects you're creating wireframes for, because with long-form sales pages, that would take me forever. So I'm just interested in hearing, like, how that's impacted your work, how you do it easily so it doesn't take up too much time, and how that works.
Yeah. So my wireframes, anytime it's a website, I do create a wireframe. So even for long form sales pages, I will lay it out. Oftentimes, you know, that won't include graphics. So I'll you know, use a little gray box to say, you know, this chart goes here, or insert video of sales letter here, that kind of a thing. But I have laid out just about everything that I do. I didn't used to do that.
Wow.
But it was about a year ago, I started, and I immediately noticed that when I presented it as a wireframe, I got significantly fewer requests for changes.
That's amazing.
Revisions. Probably, you know, let's say that the typical project has 10 or 15 revisions, like it would have gone from that to 2 or 1, you know, like it just, because it feels real and complete. And so, you know, before I'd just been presenting it as a Word document, and you know, there are still clients that I just do, you know, a Word document for. So, you know, if it's a white paper, or, you know, I'm ghosting a blog post for a CEO, for someone, those kinds of projects, I'll just give them a Word doc, because, you know, that's, laying that out as a wireframe is really a waste of my time. It's either just going to go up on their blog, or they're going to have a designer who's going to put it into a, you know, brochure format or white paper format, that kind of thing. But for web pages in particular, yeah, I always present it as a wireframe, and I've had great success doing it. It just feels final.
Yeah. So what do you use? Balsamic?
I actually create my own using Adobe Illustrator. And okay. You know, wireframing tools, we could do a whole session on wireframing.
We should, yes.
But to me, wireframe tools out there just are difficult to use compared to a tool that I already understand and know. And the basics I mean, I'm not an illustrator. I don't use Adobe Illustrator the way that a designer would, but I do know the basics. I know how to set up, you know, copy blocks and, you know, how to increase the font size and bold and that kind of a thing. You know, I can add in graphics, but that way I basically control the entire layout of the page. And the nice thing is that when the client gets that, they can then present it to the designer and say, this is the layout. And I know that the designer is not going to take my copy doc and lay it out in a way that completely messes with the flow of the information. And that has happened to me in the past, you know, where I've presented a great sales page and the designer, you know, puts things in columns or underplays a headline so that it gets lost, or uses color backgrounds to just hide information that is critical for the story being told. And wireframes, to me, really help prevent that from happening.
Yeah, that's awesome to hear. Because I did dabble, and you're right, when I did send it to clients, I had like zero pushback and zero edits. So I think that's a really good point. Do you charge extra, or do you just factor that in and you don't put it as a line item? You just kind of build it into the price tag.
I build it into the price. I don't put it as a line item because I don't want somebody to cut, you know, I don't want somebody to say, hey, let's say $400 here or whatever that price would be and eliminate the wireframe. It's not in either one of our best interests. And so I just include it, and that's what I present to the client.
Okay. Well, you talked me into it, so I'm going to start doing that.
So at this point, Kira, I've still got like 20 questions, and I'm guessing you've got a bunch too, and we're starting to go kind of long on our episode. We're going to have to do this again.
Oh yeah, we are going long. Wow. Well, okay. Let's ask like one or two more because it's been so much fun.
So I'll ask my question while you're thinking of it, yours.
Okay.
What are the two or three things that you've done that have made the biggest difference in your career?
Gosh, that's a big question. I think what's worked well is standing out in a crowded marketplace, which sounds like the title for a webinar, but it's so I think investing in the brand of my business has helped me move my business forward faster than if I did not do that. And I really believe that's true. Another one is building strong relationships with other copywriters and business people in general. I think I am good at building relationships with people, and I think that has helped me greatly in so many different ways. Those are probably the top two. And I'm just going to ask you the same question.
Okay. The biggest things in my career, number one, we talked a little bit about this in episode zero, but investing in myself. I started out thinking that, you know, you can buy a book or two and sort of learn this. And at some point, you have to be willing to really invest in yourself, and not just with what you learn, but in time, in building your own business. You know, what Michael Gerber would say, you know, working in your business or on your business instead of in your business. So taking time, but also spending money on things that will move your business forward, and, you know, not being afraid to spend $200 or $300 on breakthrough advertising, the book, because it's a rare book. And, you know,
do you have it?
I do. But
is it worth it?
It's totally worth it. Yeah, for sure. And I think actually by the time this episode airs, I've heard rumors that they're going to run another printing. So it may actually be available for purchase, but you know, looking at a book that costs $200 or $300 and thinking, man, it's just, you know, it's a 200 page book. Like, do I really spend that money? Yeah, you do, because what you get from that book in particular, but lots of other things that, you know, it's not just that book, lots of other things. If you can take away one or two ideas that are worth, you know, hundreds of dollars to your business that you can apply over time, You're not spending $200 on your book. You're spending $200 to bring in thousands of dollars in your business and in your future. That's the investment, and that mind shift has helped me as I've started to grow my business. And I think the second thing that is more recent, you mentioned it, but connecting with other copywriters has been huge, because being able to see how others conduct their business has been eye-opening to me, not just from a, hey, this is what I do to write, but, you know, what people's processes are, how they approach, you know, their going to market. You know, I'm on several newsletters of other writers that I respect, and I pay close attention to what
are you are doing. You on my list?
I am on your list, but you never send any emails out.
That's right.
But I watch, you know, I I'm on the list of some people that are totally different from me. You know, I mentioned to you off this call that, you know, I follow Ash Ambridge, and she and I could not be more different in every possible way. But I like to read her emails because it gives me an opportunity to see how, you know, people who are completely different from me are thinking and conducting business. And she has a really unique approach that I can still learn from, even though it's probably something that I wouldn't do myself. And so being exposed to all of these other writers in a mastermind group or, you know, in several Facebook groups, that kind of a thing has had a huge impact on me as well.
And Ash, if you are listening to this show, we want you on the show. Please, please email us and get on the show.
That's right. You're on our list. We're coming.
You're on the list. But no, that's interesting that I think the two, we share the same ones in common, really. It's about investing in yourself and building relationships. And that's interesting.
So we're going to talk again, Kara. But in the meantime, if people want to reach you, where do they look for you online?
You can find me at kirahug.com. That's KIRAHUG.com. And what about you?
You can probably find me at brandstoryonline.com. And I'm also on Twitter at brandstory. And I have some other sites too, but I'll just leave it at that. You've been listening to the Copywriter Club podcast with Kira Hug and Rob Marsh. Music for the show is a clip from Gravity by Whitest Boy Alive, available in iTunes. If you like what you've heard, you can help us spread the word by subscribing in iTunes and by leaving a review. For show notes, a full transcript, and links to our free Facebook community, visit thecopywriterclub.com. We'll see you next episode.